In our study this morning, we're going to begin briefly in 2 Kings chapter 10, and then we're going to move on from that text in our study of the history. But to preface some of the things that I want to talk with you about this morning, I want to take just a moment and review. Review is important. Cameron, you were talking about the military. I had a friend in the military a few years ago, and he said, in the work that he did, he was a teacher, and he said there were three rules for learning in the military: repetition, repetition, repetition. And I believe that's right. And so we spend a good bit of time in our class being reminded of things that we have studied in the past. But in our study in particular just here, we are studying during a period of time that some believe to be most difficult in the period of the kings because of the names that are used. And you've seen this map many times, or this map, this chart many times, and we're going to look at it probably several more times before we're through, just to identify the characters. Sometimes in our study of Old Testament history, in particular in this period of the kings, we become confused because we don't know what king we're reading about. And so the history gets bogged down. And often we say, well, I can't pronounce the name. I don't know who that is. And we want to stay focused on the lesson. And we can't do that unless we know who we're talking about. Now, we have followed the lineage of the kings from David in our study. And we know that God had promised unto David, I will establish thy throne, thy kingdom forever. And we read that in a passage I want you to remember from 2 Samuel chapter 7, beginning in verse 14 through verse 16. God established the house of David. What does that mean, Randy? He established his house. The lineage would not end. That's right. Until it was fulfilled in Christ. And what we want to note here is that after the period of the United Kingdom, when Rehoboam divided the kingdom, we find that the United Kingdom lasted how long? 120 years, yes, through the reign of the first king, who was Saul, David, and Solomon. And then his son, Rehoboam, divided the kingdom through foolishness on his behalf, and we find then that Jeroboam was brought back up out of the land of Egypt and became the king of what then was known as the kingdom of Israel, as opposed to the southern kingdom, the kingdom of Judah. We know that the lineage of the kings then followed from David to Jehoshaphat, and Jehoshaphat, of course, was a good king. We want to pause just there. I'm not suggesting to you that Jehoshaphat was the son of David. The idea is descent here, to follow the lineage. But we know that during the time that Jehoshaphat was king, there was a very wicked king in Israel. One characteristic of all of the kings of Israel, all of them, was what? They were all wicked, every one of them. Not a good king in the whole batch. Many of the kings of Judah were wicked kings, but some were good kings. Jehoshaphat, for the most part, was a good king. Joash, for the most part, at least starting out, was a good king. We'll read about King Josiah and learn that overall Josiah was a good king. Hezekiah was a good king. But for our segment here in our study, we know that at the time that Jehoshaphat reigned in Judah, the wicked king Ahab reigned in Israel. What was it that Ahab and his old wicked wife brought to Israel? Baal worship. That's right. Who had introduced calf worship? Jeroboam. That's right. When he began to reign in Israel. When we talk about Ahab, we know that God had a prophet to tell Ahab that I'm going to cut off your house. What was the prophet's name? Elijah. That's right. Now, Randy, just as surely as God said to David, I'm going to establish your house, what did he mean when he said through Elijah to Ahab, I'm going to cut off your house?
Your lineage will end.
Your lineage will end. That's right.
Soon.
Yes, very soon. Well, we know that Ahab was killed in battle. We know that Ahab and Jehoshaphat had made an alliance to fight against the Syrians. Now, Jehoshaphat desired to inquire of the Lord and find out how this battle was going to turn out. We learn that Ahab had a whole bunch of prophets to tell him that it's fine, it's good to go into battle with the Syrians. All is well, you will be victorious and return in peace. Did Jehoshaphat believe that? No, he didn't believe that. He asked Ahab, is there another prophet that we might inquire? And Jehoshaphat was told by Ahab, yes, there is one, and his name is...
That guy.
Uh-huh, that's the one. What was his name? Micaiah. That's right. Micaiah. But Ahab didn't like Micaiah. Why? He told the truth. Well, yes. Ahab said, he never says anything good about me. So what we find then is they inquire of Micaiah, and the prophet, or the messenger rather, of Ahab reports to Micaiah that all these other prophets, and how many of them were there, by the way? They've said all kinds of good things. Not at that point. The prophets of Ahab at this point that have told him good things about going to battle with the Syrians. There were about 200 of them. And so the messenger of Ahab said to Micaiah, you know, we've got all these prophets that have said good things. Now what you need to do is you need to get in line and say good things about this battle. And Micaiah said, well, all right, I'll tell you what you want to hear. No. I'll tell you what God said. And at first, he told them what they wanted to hear. And then Ahab said to Micaiah, how many times do I have to remind you to tell me what God said? Now, Ahab wasn't interested in what God said, but what did Micaiah then tell him? You're going to die. That's right. And what did Ahab do with Micaiah? Put him in jail and fed him on the bread of affliction and the water of affliction and said, I'll deal with you when I come back in peace. And what did Micaiah say to him?
If
you come back, I'm not a true prophet. Now, from Kentucky, we'd say, you ain't coming back. Now, that's just the way that worked. Now, Ahab, when he went to battle with the Syrians, dressed himself like a regular soldier. And when he dressed himself like a regular soldier, the intent was to deceive the enemy. What was it that the king of Syria had instructed his captains? Find the king. That's right. Don't waste your time with the soldiers. We want to kill the king. All right. But Ahab's dressed up like the regular soldiers. How was Jehoshaphat dressed up? Like a king and all of his royalty. And when the armies of the Syrians engaged in the battle, they followed after Jehoshaphat until they discovered that's not Ahab. And then, perchance, what did one of the soldiers of the Syrians do? All right, he just at random shot an arrow. And who did it hit? Ahab. And so he kind of slumped down in his chariot and got out of the battle. And when they washed out the blood from the chariot after Ahab was dead, what happened? The dogs came and licked up his blood just like Elijah the prophet said would be. So be it. Well, we know that Ahab then has a son, Ahaziah, who sits on the throne over the kingdom of Israel. Ahaziah, good king, bad king? Bad king. All of them on this side of the board. All of them bad kings. Ahaziah. We want to note that Ahaziah was killed. And Jehoram becomes king. Jehoram was Ahaziah's brother. Now follow me on this so we don't get confused. Jehoram was Ahaziah's brother. He becomes king. He has a sister by the name of Athaliah, who marries the son of Jehoshaphat, who has the same name as her brother. Do you see that? Sometimes that throws folks. But Jehoram over here married Athaliah, the daughter of Ahab. What kind of king would you expect him to be? Well, they had a son whose name was Ahaziah. What kind of king would you expect him to be? The Bible tells us in 2 Chronicles 22:3 that his mother was his counselor. See, he's the grandson of Ahab and Jezebel. Don't stand much of a chance, does he? With his mother teaching him right here, Ahaziah. Well, Ahaziah makes an alliance with Jehoram, his uncle. The Syrians are still up there fogging around somewhere, and they want to do battle. And the city in question is the city of Ramoth Gilead. And so they're going to go and take the city of Ramoth Gilead from the Syrians, Ahaziah and Jehoram. But you remember way back when, through the prophet Elijah, when Elijah was so discouraged that he just wanted to crawl in a hole and pull it in after him. Well, he expressed to the Lord he just wanted to die. But the Lord said, no, you've got some things to do. Well, what is it that God had for him to do? I want you to go down and appoint Hazael to be king of Syria. And I want you to appoint Jehu to be king of Israel. And I want you to appoint Elisha to be your successor. Now, all three of these characters come into play to pronounce God's judgment upon Israel. God said who Hazael doesn't kill, Jehu will, and who Jehu doesn't kill, Elisha will. And so judgment is going to be pronounced upon the house of Ahab. Now, old Jehu was appointed to be king, and Ahaziah and Jehoram have entered into this alliance to fight against the Syrians. And in their battle with the Syrians, Jehoram over here is injured. And he goes back to Jezreel to heal from his wounds. And Ahaziah from Jerusalem goes to Jezreel to visit his uncle Jehoram. And Jehu goes to Jezreel, where he kills Jehoram, and then kills Ahaziah, and then kills the old wicked wife of Ahab, Jezebel. And when he asked the question, when he approached the city, who is on the Lord's side? There were a couple of folks who were, and they threw old wicked Jezebel down off the wall, and she splattered when she hit the ground, and Jehu run his chariot over a few times, kind of made a mess out of her, and then went to eat. And when he got through eating and he came back, he ordered that her body be buried, for after all, she's the daughter of a king. And what'd they find? Found her skull, palms of her hands, and her feet. What was it the prophet Elijah had said way back there to Ahab when he said, the dogs are going to lick up your blood? What's going to happen to Jezebel? They're going to eat her. Yeah. And when they found her head and her hands, the palms of her hands and her feet, what happened to the rest of her? The dogs ate her. The dogs ate her, just like the prophet said. That's right. Now, that brings us to the next step in our study. It brings us to Athaliah and her desire to reign over the kingdom of Judah. Now that takes us past, really, well, one other thought, and then we'll go past it, but in 2 Kings chapter 10, we know that Ahab had 70 sons, verse 1, in Samaria. Well, if he has 70 sons in Samaria, his house has not yet been cut off, has it? But these two boys have. But he's got 70 more. When Jehu goes to Samaria, what does he demand of the Samaritans?
I'll spare your cities and send me 70 heads in a cart.
That's right.
70 sons of Ahab's heads.
All right, that's right. So that's what they did. In verse 7, it came to pass, when the letter came to them, that they took the king's sons and slew them, even 70 persons, and put their heads in baskets and sent them unto Jezreel. Verse 10, pick up the reading. It says, "Know now that there shall fall unto the earth nothing of the word of Jehovah, which Jehovah spake concerning the house of Ahab. For Jehovah hath done that which he spake by his servant Elijah. So Jehu smote all that remained of the house of Ahab in Jezreel, and all his great men, and all his familiar friends, and his priests, until he left him none remaining." Wouldn't you want to be a friend of Ahab? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. So we find that Ahab's house is cut off, as the text tells us, just like Elijah the prophet had said. Now, as you continue into this chapter, Jehu has a plan to get rid of Baal worship that has been introduced by Ahab and Jezebel. What's his plan?
He's going to have all the worshipers of Baal gathered together in one temple.
All right, going to have them all come together. Now, why would they do that at the order of Jehu?
Because he said he was going to promote Baal above what his father did.
All right, you think Ahab was good. You hadn't seen the half yet. I'm going to serve Baal a whole lot more than Ahab did. But in verse 19, it says that he did it subtly. In other words, he was deceitful about it. That wasn't really his intent. But his desire was, his desire was to bring all of those who serve Baal together, but also to bring together the prophets of Baal and bring together the priests of Baal and those who had any association with this practice of idolatry. And when they were all brought together, and it was pointed out, I believe, Wednesday night, I've forgotten the verse where he made inquiry, there it is, verse 23. He made inquiry if there be any that were worshipers of Jehovah, and they were not to be brought. It says, but the worshipers of Baal only. Now, when Jehu got all these worshipers of Baal together, what did he do?
He introduced them to 80 of his soldiers.
Yeah, he did. He introduced them to a whole bunch of soldiers. And what did they do to them? They slew them. That's right. Killed them. Now, I want to make note just here that Jehu has a tremendous opportunity. The opportunity that he has, I'm going to pass beyond that, the opportunity that he has is to establish worship of God. But he doesn't do that. Here's what he's done. He's fulfilled the Old Testament prophecy of Elijah. The house of Ahab is destroyed. But rather than to seek Jehovah and worship and serve Jehovah and instruct the people to, even though he's destroyed Baal worship, what does he do? Turns to calf worship. How do you explain that? Look at verse 29. Verse 29. Chapter 10. It says, "Howbeit from the sins of Jeroboam the son of Nebat, wherewith he made Israel to sin, Jehu departed not from after them, to wit the golden calves that were in Bethel and that were in Dan. And Jehovah said unto Jehu, because thou hast done well in executing that which is right in mine eyes, and hast done done unto the house of Ahab according to all that was in my heart, thy sons of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel. But Jehu took no heed to walk in the law of Jehovah, the God of Israel, with all his heart. He departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, wherewith he made Israel to sin." Now, what Jeroboam are we talking about? It says the son of Nebat, but who is that? That's the first king of Israel that has introduced Baal worship, calf worship. Why did he introduce calf worship when we go back and read that?
Because he came
All right, he ran over there to get away from Solomon, that's right. And he brought calf worship back. Interestingly enough, he explained to the people of Israel, it's too much for you to go to Jerusalem. What was he afraid of? If the people of Israel go down into Judah to Jerusalem to worship God, what was he afraid of? He'd lose their loyalty. That's right. They won't come back. Yeah. So I'll set up a calf in Dan up in the northern part and one in Bethel just north of the border of Judah. But it's too far for you to go down to Judah, to Jerusalem, to worship. And so he introduced calf worship. And here we're reading about what Jehu did. Let me ask you a question. How on earth can you justify destroying everything that has to do with the worship of Baal and fall down before a calf and worship that?
Especially after verse 30 says the Lord spoke to him.
Yeah. The Lord spoke to him.
The only God that can speak.
Yeah, that's true. And the interesting thing to notice is when they first adopted calf worship back with Aaron, at the mount, said, here are your gods that have brought you up out of Egypt.
Yes. And that right on the heels of what?
All the miracles and everything that had been happening.
Yeah, the plagues, the crossing of the Red Sea, the manna, the water from the rocks. And now here are the gods that brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And so we just shake our head and say, I can't seem to pigeonhole a why on that. What's up with these people? Well, what we see is the foolishness of the wisdom of men. Read the bulletin article, by the way. Going to be a whole lot more said about that. But the foolishness of the wisdom of men. That's what we do, folks. When we abandon the knowledge of God, that's what we do. You read about that in Romans chapter 1. We're going to talk about that in the sermon briefly in our study this morning. But here are those that have turned away from Baal worship and have now begun to worship calves. Of course, we have on the chart that God was angry. Certainly He was. He's spoken with Jehu. Jehu's done a lot of good things. He's been the instrument in the hand of God to bring about a lot of reforms in Israel. But now he's worshiping these calves. Now in verse 32 of the text, it says, in those days Jehovah began to cut off from Israel, and Hazael smote them in all the borders of Israel, from the Jordan eastward, all the land of Gilead, the Gadites, the Reubenites, and the Manassites, from Aor, which is by the valley of the Arnon, even Gilead and Bashan. Now the rest of the acts of Jehu, we'll pause just there. What's happening in the land of Israel? What are the Syrians doing to them? Pardon me?
Invading
them. That's right. They're taking away their land. Now, we said we were going to review just a little bit. Juan, would you read for me, please? Deuteronomy 4, verse 25. Deuteronomy 4, verse 25. While he's turning to that, Richard, can you give me the setting of that text? Who's the writer? What's happened that brings us to Deuteronomy 4?
Were you talking about?
I was.
Oh, I was busy typing.
I'm waiting for you to answer me.
Is it 425?
Yes.
Oh, that's where God's talking about that. If you obey me, then I'll bless you, and if you don't obey me, then I'll cut you off from the land that I'm going to give you.
All right, that's right. Randy's going to read that. But my question was, Juan is going to read that. Randy, maybe you'll answer my question. My question is this: what was the setting that prompted Moses to write that? At what stage in their history are they? Anybody? All right. Pardon me? All right. They're just about to go into the land. They've come from they're approaching Mount Sinai. Chapter 5 is where we read of Mount Sinai. But the giving of the law. But they've come up out of the land of Egypt. What had God promised them? He had promised them a land. You remember way back yonder when we look at Abraham. That land was defined. Way long before there was such a character as Moses. Long before there was such a nation as Israel. God had promised to give unto Abraham a land. A long time before that. And He told him what the borders of that land would be. What was the borders?
The river Euphrates to the north.
Yes.
The river Egypt to the south.
Yes. And that takes us all the way back to Genesis, chapter 15, verse 18. Way back yonder. So we've got hundreds of years that have passed. And Moses leads them now up out of the land of Egypt. We might know who he leads. He leads the descendants of Abraham, who have for many years been servants in Egypt, and now have developed into a great nation of people. And as Moses leads them out of Egypt, he tells them, now, one, the passage.
This is 25.
Deuteronomy chapter 4. Yes, might start verse 24.
Okay. For the Lord your God is a consuming fiery, jealous God. When you beget children and grandchildren and have grown old in the land and act corruptly and make a carved image in the form of anything, and do evil in the sight of the Lord your God to provoke Him to anger. I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day that you will soon utterly perish from the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess. You will not prolong your days in it, but will be utterly destroyed.
Isn't that interesting? Now they've worshipped idols, and now here come the Syrians. What are the Syrians doing to them? Taking away their land. Just like Moses said, before they ever came into the promised land, the Syrians are taking away their land. Now Moses didn't tell them that just once. If you look in Deuteronomy chapter 8, these should be in your list of passages. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Let's see, Rick, would you mind to read some for me? Beginning in verse 19 and 20, Deuteronomy chapter 8.
And it shall be, if thou shalt forget Jehovah thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day, that ye shall surely perish, as the nations of Jehovah maketh before you, so shall ye perish, because ye would not hearken unto the voice of Jehovah your God.
Well, what's the matter with these folks? They just dance or what?
Faithless.
All right. As we read further in the book of Deuteronomy, Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy chapter 30. He said to them, beginning in verse 1 through verse 3. Much more in that context, but we'll just look at those verses. Mr. Chris Peters, would you read those verses for me, 1 through 3?
And it shall come to pass, when all these things are come upon thee, the blessing and the curse which I have set before thee, and thou shalt call them to mind among all the nations, whither Jehovah thy God hath driven thee, and shall return unto Jehovah thy God, and shall obey his voice according to all that I command thee this day, thou and thy children, with all thy heart and with all thy soul, that then Jehovah thy God will turn thy captivity and have compassion upon thee, and will return and gather thee from all the peoples, whither Jehovah thy God has scattered thee.
Alright, question. Did the Syrians take the Israelites captive and make them slaves and remove them from the land? No, the Syrians didn't do that. But later the Assyrians did. But when God told them, you're going to lose your land, what we see now is the Syrians moving in and taking the land. Now, wasn't that what Joshua told them? What was the work and function, mission of Joshua? What did he do?
He led them into the land.
He led them into the land. All of it.
Well, started going anyway.
Well, yeah. When you look at Joshua chapter 21, verses 43 through verse 45, it appears that he led them into all of it. What's it say there, Jenny? Joshua chapter 21, verse 43 through 45. While you're there, turn to chapter 23 and read verses 14 through 16 too, please.
And behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth, and ye know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one thing is there of all the good things which Jehovah your God spake concerning you. All are come to pass unto you, not one thing has been thereof. And it shall come to pass, that as all the good things are come upon you of which Jehovah your God spake unto you, so will Jehovah bring upon you all the evil things, until he have destroyed you from off this good land which Jehovah your God hath given you. When ye transgress the covenant of Jehovah your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods, and bow down yourselves to them, then will the anger of Jehovah be kindled against you. And ye shall perish quickly from off the good land which he hath given unto you.
All right, Joshua has told them the same thing that Moses told them. But as we begin the period of the judges in Judges chapter 2, David, what does verse 10 say?
Judges 2 and verse 10?
Yes, please. No, we're not there. Judges 2.
Oh, that's 4.
Okay. Well, now what's going on? Hadn't Moses told them to teach your children? Hadn't Moses told them the consequences if you don't? Hadn't Moses told them about the prospects of the land and whether or not you get to keep it or lose it? Hadn't Joshua told them that same thing? Well, what happened? This don't sound like the people that came up out of the land of Egypt. Doesn't sound like the people that went down into the Red Sea, crossed on dry ground. Doesn't sound like the people that Joshua brought across the Jordan River on dry ground during the time of the flood stay. What's happened?
Well, they failed to teach.
All right, we've got another generation on the scene. And they haven't been taught the things that their forefathers had been taught. And furthermore, even if they had, we see the people have the same desire to worship idols like the people around them that their fathers did.
Well, it really comes back to the, I hesitate to say human nature, but what we talk about is the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life that John talks about. That's what appeals to them about idol worship. Is those idols allow you to do the things you want to do.
Yeah.
Because idols are created by men who create them in that way.
Yeah. And so the will of the idol becomes your will.
Yeah.
You can do what you want to.
So it's rebellion against God because you don't want to do, you don't want somebody else telling you what to do. You want to tell everyone else what to do.
That's right. But what we see here during the time of Jehu is it's beginning now to play out. Hundreds of years down the pipe, they're starting to lose their land. Just like God said, way back yonder as He spoke through Moses. Okay? Well, let's go another step or two with our chart. Here's the map of the land that we're talking about, and the text that we're reading about there in 2 Kings chapter 10. 2 Kings chapter 10, get back on the right page, there beginning in verse 32, how that the king of Syria begins to invade, and he takes Gilead, and he takes Bashan, and he begins to invade and take away the land that God had given unto his people. Any questions or comments just here? Powerful lesson. They didn't get it. Do we? When you look further in the text, picking up at chapter 11, 2 Kings chapter 11. Now, I don't know if you've picked up on what I've tried to do or not. I tried to highlight the passages in red that we're going to try to follow. Sometimes, as we look at the Kings and look at the Chronicles, we're seeing parallel accounts of the same thing. Sometimes you're reading of exactly the same incidences. Sometimes you're reading some details in one that are left out of the other, much like you do of the life of Christ in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But on this particular point, I've highlighted both of these accounts, 2 Kings 11 and 2 Chronicles 22 through chapter 23, because there are elements in both of them that we want to note. Let's notice, first of all, who Athaliah is. Remember the chart of the genealogies we had a few moments ago? Who is she? All right, she's the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel, who was the king of Israel. She's the one that counseled her son from Jehoram, and his name was Ahaziah. Very good. And now we find that the son, Ahaziah, is dead, and Athaliah is determined, I want to be the she-king. Okay? So what does she do to accomplish that? She kills the royal seed. Now, can you imagine that? I want to be king so bad, I'm going to kill everybody that descended from me. Kill my grandbabies.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Raised by Ahab and Jezebel, who brought in the, was there, I get my idolatrous religions mixed up, were they one of the ones that sacrificed infants, or was that?
Yes.
Okay.
That was a part of worship of Baal. The text here doesn't tell us that. Later on we learn that. Yes.
This has been a question in my mind. Jezebel, so evil, is it possible that she would have sacrificed some of her children, or that Ahab, you know, he had all those sons, he obviously had other wives, but would they have possibly sacrificed some of those, in which case it wouldn't have been anything for her to sacrifice these grandsons, and it would be some sort of messed up mentality there?
Yeah, would be messed up mentality, yes, indeed. To accept the idea or the possibility that this was acceptable behavior in the society to the worship of Baal, to offer your children in sacrifice. We know that was true concerning Molech, that parents would sacrifice their children and worship to Molech. It probably wouldn't be considered so very unusual for her to kill her children, but what we, or grandchildren, but what we do see here is the reason is different. She's not doing it out of any act of adoration for the idol.
But the idea that you just do what you have to do to get what you want.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Selfish to the core. And that's what she did.
So we're on the Judah side now.
Yeah.
It's Ahab's daughter.
Yes. We're Judah's side. Yeah.
We're over on Judah's side.
We're over on Judah's side.
Because her daughter, Ahaziah married Jehoram.
Athaliah. No. Ahab's daughter, Athaliah, married Jehoram. There you go.
And Ahaziah.
is their son.
But he's dead.
He's dead.
So these would be Ahab and Jezebel's great-grandsons?
Grandsons, I believe.
Great-grandsons.
Great-grandsons, okay, yeah. Great-grandsons.
So, Jenny, you didn't go down the line to get them all?
No.
No. You just got the 77.
Yeah. Yeah, because we got one left over here. After Athaliah's through. We're going to be talking about him just a little bit. But look, if you will, at the text, chapter 11. It says, "Now when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal. But Jehoshaphat, the daughter of the king, Jehoram," now in the American Standard Translation that says Joram, that's Jehoram, and that adds to some of the confusion because we have the same man called by two different names.
Wait, which Jehoram?
This is Jehoram, king of Judah.
Okay.
All right. Notice also in verse 2, another identifying characteristic. It says, "But Jehoshaphat, the daughter of King Jehoram, sister of Ahaziah." Yeah, let that sink. Yeah, the one that just died. Sister of Ahaziah is married to Jehoiada the priest. So young Joash is Jehoshaphat's nephew. Thank you. Nephew. So she takes her sister's child, as it were, and she and her husband, Jehoiada, and had him. Just a baby. They took him and they hid him. Where'd they hide him? Alright. The left side of the house. It says the guard stood. No, that's not correct. Let me back up in the text. The house of the Lord. There it is, verse 3. 6 years. Now during that 6 years, you'll notice that Athaliah is the she king, and I don't know of a better term, because she's usurped the authority of the king, and she doesn't have any right to be king. But she serves for 6 years as the ruler in Judah. And we see some of the characteristics that she displayed. She destroyed the royal seed. The account in the Chronicles, very interesting observation, is that she destroyed part of the house of God. But Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat, who have been responsible for sparing the life of this young man, Joash, when he is, how old do they declare him to be king? 6, 7, or 8? Well, let's look at the text.
Twenty-one.
When he was 7 years old, yes, he began to reign. 7 years old, he began to reign. And they bring him out and declare him to be king. What's the reaction of Athaliah? Surprise! What does she exclaim?
Treason!
Treason! I want you to look at how Jehoiada has stacked the deck. What's he done to protect young Joash? That's right. He surrounded him with guards, armed guards. In fact, if you'll notice the account in the Chronicles, in 2 Chronicles chapter 24, I believe it is, in verse 9, it says, "And Jehoiada the priest delivered to the captains of hundreds the spears and the bucklers and the shields which had been King David's, which were in the house of God." And it says in verse 10, "And he set all the people, every man with his weapon in his hand, from the right side of the house to the left side of the house, along by the altar of the house, by the king round about. And they brought out the king's son, and put the crown on him, verse 11, and gave him the testimony and made him king. And Jehoiada and his sons anointed him, and they said, long live the king. So now young Joash has become king. Athaliah is protesting. No, no, can't be so. What happened to Athaliah? Alright, they took her out where the horse's entrance was, and they killed her. And that was the end of Athaliah. You can read that in 2 Chronicles 23, verse 15. Okay, verses 14 and 15. So she was executed at the instruction of Jehoiada. Alright? Now, with her execution, what happens to this lineage in Judah?
It ends.
It ends. Yeah. We return now to the house of David with young Joash. Young Joash declared to be king. Now, we want to talk a little bit about Joash, if I have time to introduce a little bit of this. And you'll notice, highlighted in red, we're going to turn now to the account of the Chronicles. So if you'd open your Bibles over to that text, we'll notice some things.
Like Jehu should include the sisters.
Pardon me?
It seemed like Jehu should include the sisters.
Oh, and gotten rid of Athaliah too. Well, she was not very good. So Joash is declared to be king. Ripe old age of 7 years old. In the account here of 2 Chronicles, drop down in the text to chapter 24. It says, Joash was 7 years old when he began to reign, and reigned 40 years in Jerusalem. And his mother's name was Zibiah of Beersheba. And Joash did all that, or did that rather, which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, all the days of Jehoiada the priest. And Jehoiada took for him two wives, and he begat sons and daughters. Am I out of time? That's not good. We'll have to start with that Wednesday. So if you would please, continue reading 2 Chronicles chapter 24. Just keep going forward with that.